Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of RNIB Tech Talk. It's our technology show where we discuss, well, believe it or not, technology, all for blind and partially sighted people. My name is Hubert Pavelkovich, and yes, it's a show all about what tech you are interested in as well. So if you actually have some tech questions, suggestions, tech moans, then, you can let us know. That magic email address before we get on with the show is, as always, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up on the show this week, we'll be chatting about some recently released Braille products you might have missed. We'll try out an organising puzzle game for iOS devices. Plus, we will have another tech timeline. Joining me are my fellow co-hosts, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Let's find out what's on your tech radars this week. Natalie, we'll start with you.
Small article I read, which a friend sent me, it's very interesting, about something called Field of Vision. I wasn't sure if we talked about this before or if it's just a growing area in the tech space. But Field of Vision is a device that allows a vision impaired user to feel the course of a sporting event. So it might be tennis, it might be a football match. And as I understand it, you've got a flat device with a magnetically attached ball, and the ball won't move in line with the ball on screen. And you feel different haptic vibrations to represent maybe different tackles or a move. So perhaps it'll vibrate in a certain way if it's a serve or a volley. And yeah, it's all about bringing the game to life for somebody who can't see it. So you're not just relying on the commentary. Like I say, it was a very small article, so I don't know much about it, but I thought it sounded very interesting.
Oh yeah, definitely. As somebody that loves tennis, I follow tennis very closely. I really enjoy particularly the Grand Slams because they are the ones that get the commentaries on the radio. But yeah, that's incredible, actually.
I'd be quite interested to experience that because part of me kind of worries that I might get almost too much information to follow and it might be a bit of an overload until you at least get used to all the patterns. But part of me would love to see just how much difference it will make to be able to follow a game like this along with, say, I don't know, any spoken commentary. I think it'd be quite interesting to have the two side by side.
Well, that's what I thought, Hubert. I'm not sure if it were me, I'd just rely on the device. I'm sure I'd probably want commentary, but to be fair, the commentary is part of a game anyway, or a match, whatever it is you're watching. So it'd be perfectly quote unquote normal to have the device and listen to the commentary at the same time. I suspect what you're saying about the haptic feedback, you'd maybe want to sort of have different levels to vary how much information you get, but you can maybe build that up over time would be an ideal situation. So as you get more and more used to it, you add more and more functionality, as it were. I think this is sort of early days, so it'd be good to see if more information comes out. But I thought that sounded cool, especially as Wimbledon and the World Cup and all those things are very, very near. So, that was what caught my attention this week.
Summer of sport is very much on. All right, Jackie Brown, what's caught your attention this week?
So I had the pleasure of talking with Stuart Lawler this week in Belfast. We were both in the RNIB office. And it was really nice. So we went into the recording studio and did a piece for this show. But one of the things that Stuart told me about, and he actually brought a demo copy of it up, was something called the Braille Pen 24. Now, it's made by Harpo, and it is soon to be released. It is a really, really, I think you guys actually might like it just for its size and portability alone. It's a really dinky little device. It's got a Braille display, 24 Braille cells, and of course the equivalent number of cursor routing buttons. It has your standard Braille keyboard on it, and at the front there are a couple of thumb keys for panning, and there's also a little joystick that you move around the interface of the actual device. It pairs up to five Bluetooth devices. The display itself has the same dot technology as the Dot Pad X. So that's kind of interesting as well. You can connect it to Android and iOS and obviously your Windows machine as well. It has a micro SD card in it, so you can load stuff onto that card. There is also an app called Braille Pen Sync, which you can download free of charge from whichever store you use. I think the price is going to be around 1200, which, if you look at the price of any Braille display, they're obviously all over, that kind of price. But I thought for 24 Braille cells, that's actually not too bad. If if you look at it in one aspect, you look at the amount of cells that these Braille displays have, some of them would be more expensive for less Braille cells. So I think it is competitively priced. There is more to come out from Harpo about this device, and I believe Sight and Sound are going to be selling it. So I think I might get my hands on one just to have a play with once Sight Village is over. I think Stuart's going to kindly let me have a more of a play of it. But what I saw of it, I really thought, yeah, this is a lot of people will love this, because you could literally put it in in your bag or a backpack or a very deep pocket if you've got one. There'll be a lanyard, you could hang it round your neck. What it does need though, is a case. It's aluminium. But it doesn't ha come with a case at the moment, and I'm sure maybe Turtleback or some company like that will maybe make a case for it, but it definitely needs one. So there are a couple of bug fixes that need sorting out as well, I believe. But yeah, it's another one. It's all these myriad of Braille devices. So it I suppose each one offers its own kind of unique selling point. So yeah, let's see where we go with that one.
Yeah, sounds quite interesting. The size is very tempting for me. It's a device that, when I heard about it initially a while back, sounded quite interesting. So before I was to purchase, because I've got a small 20-cell Braille display, so I want to see what it's like, how it compares. So I think I'd love to get a physical feel of it before I made such a decision to purchase. But it does sound intriguing.
Yeah, I think this size is very appealing as well. And I agree that whilst none of these things are cheap, that one sounds reasonably priced.
If you compare it, say, to the Braillant 20, it's actually thinner than that. It feels a bit smaller. The Braillant is more chunky, sort of thicker from top to bottom, but this Braille pen is really very, it's very dinky. I would say it's more in the realms of, if people remember the old Braillant Speak, it was very lightweight and thin. This Braille pen is very dinky and thin as well. I think a lot of people will love it just for the size alone.
Maybe you could put it in a sock rather than put it in a case.
Yeah, or one of those wristbands that you can buy, that you can wear on your wrist. I mean, it might just about be feasible.
There you go. See, there you go. Well, that's an alternative. It'd be good to hear more about it, certainly. Or for me, it's a short one. It's something I'm beta testing at the moment. So we've talked about many a podcast apps on this show. We've talked to Apple Podcasts, we've talked to Castro, we've talked to Pocket Casts. I'm currently testing an app called Simulcast, which is being released at some point. And it has all your usual features, playlists, inbox, queue, stats, plenty of stats, which for me is a delightful concept. It has all your usual features you would expect, very customizable with various behaviors. But I think the selling point for me is here that this app also has, it does have Apple Music Radio integration, but it also has a radio integration in general. So what you really have is a podcast app and a radio player all in one, sort of bit like TuneIn Radio Pro kind of is, but this one offers you obviously a lot more choices in terms of podcasts and radio. But I quite like the aspect that, as well as my podcasts and my stats, I can also listen to radio stations. And this developer has put this up on the app of his community, and he's really interested in feedback and constantly reacts to feedback he gets. So there are a few issues at the moment with the with what I'm testing that I think are quite important to fix. They don't make the app unusable, but they make certain parts of it unusable, I would say. But it is really good because it is very accessible. There's specific sections for accessibility settings as well. So the developer has really not only put thought into the accessibility side, but actually keeps the community involved throughout the development process, which I always really, really like to point out, because there's a lot of developers that don't look at accessibility from the get-go. They, you know, they look at it afterwards. It's often an afterthought. So it's nice to see developers put accessibility at this early level of development. So yeah, Simulcast, at some point when it's officially released, we'll probably get a demo. But that's what I'm currently testing, a podcast app and a radio app all in one. So yes, plenty of things there, and plenty of things still to come on the show. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
Well, today I'm joined face to face by Stuart Lawler of Sight and Sound. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, Jackie. It's lovely to be sitting in the same room as you. In fact, in your nice studio here at RNIB.
Yeah, it's great. Makes a change from a Teams call. So, Stuart, can you give me sort of a rundown of what new product Sight and Sound have at the moment, and you know where it's all going? Because it just seems to be like a massive amount of stuff that you're selling nowadays, and I thought it would be nice for you to come in and tell us a little bit of, you know, what is happening.
Yeah, thank you, Jackie. So I suppose, first of all, to say there's always we're always looking to find new products, and we're always looking around the market to see what's coming. Some things stick, some things don't stick, it's fair to say. But we try to find the best products that we can for our customer base. So just as a reminder, Sight and Sound don't manufacture anything. We go out there, we go out into the world, I suppose, and talk to the great companies that we work with to find the best products. So maybe, Jackie, because you and I have been chatting off air for the last little while about Braille, so let's start with some Braille things. And there's been a lot of talk about the Braille Sense 7. So this is the latest version of the HIMSS, or some people now know it as Selvus, note taker. So if you've been sort of using the Braille Sense 6, you'll be familiar with how that works. The Braille Sense 7 will feel not too different, I suppose, but there are some changes, and one of the biggest is how the new cell technology in the device has been implemented. So it's using touch cell technology, so you'll be able to swipe the cells to do various things. There's all sorts of gestures that are built in. The cursor routing keys that we know and love, Jackie, have disappeared.
Oh dear.
But you will be able to slide your finger up on a cell to reveal the cursor, and then obviously use it then as you would in the traditional way. And the Braille Sense 7 will come in a couple of flavors. One of the things we get asked a lot is about a QWERTY version of Braille Sense products. They haven't existed for a long time, I think since the U2 possibly.
That's right.
So the Braille Sense 7 will have a special case that you can get which has a QWERTY keyboard as part of it. And it actually clips down over the Braille keys. So you don't have the Braille keyboard unless you choose to take off the case. And then you're using the QWERTY keyboard to control the Braille Sense 7. It also has the facility to engage with the NVDA remote application. So if you have a PC running NVDA, you can connect to that PC and control it using your Braille Sense 7. We expect the device to be out at some point in August. and we hope to have it available on our stand at Site Village. So that's Braille Excellent. Sense, Jackie. There's a lot of talk about WeWalk, the smart cane. The WeWalk 2 has been around for about a year now, I want to say, maybe slightly more than a year, actually. And we have WeWalk on a special, at time of recording anyway, on a special offer. But maybe as you're listening to this, give us a call if you want to check pricing for WeWalk, and we can give the contact details at the end. The WeWalk app, of course, got a significant update recently, so you have access to maps and navigation, and there are various subscriptions that are now built into the WeWalk app. So if you've got questions, do get in touch with us. And just finally on WeWalk, it's also worth mentioning WeAssist. So this is WeWalk's version of Aira, I guess, or WeWalk's answer to Aira. They're offering live visual assistance with trained visual interpreters every day, in this part of the world anyway, from 12 noon to 4 a.m. So you have, what, about 16 hours of visual help if you need it. And you get a certain amount of credits every month that you can use on the WeWalk app. And if you haven't tried that, of course, you can download the WeWalk app and get a free demo. I think it's 14 days. I don't know if you've tried that yourself, Jackie.
No, I haven't. I've seen the app for actual GPS, but I haven't seen the WeAssist, so that's a good new one.
Yeah, there's so much nowadays, I think, in the world of navigation, so we're keeping an eye on that. For people with low vision, we've been working with a really interesting startup out of the Netherlands, and a product called Luna Glasses. And this was developed by a guy called Kurt Hoogsteen. My Dutch is horrendous, so I've probably mispronounced that gentleman's name, so I apologise. But Kurt himself has RP, and he suffers from night blindness, and he was looking for a device that would allow people to travel confidently at night. So Luna Glasses have smart technology that will change and make an adjustment to the environment as you travel. So what you see will change depending on the level of light and depending on how dark it is when you're moving around at night. And it gives people that added confidence. It's been quite popular for people who do have night blindness. There's a couple of new devices from Chinese manufacturer Zumax. So we have Snow devices. We have a Snow Pad, which is essentially a distance camera that can connect to the iPad. Very popular in schools. We've the Snow 12 and Snow Eye, which are handheld magnifiers that can also be used with Windows devices. So we'll have all those on the stand at Site Village exhibitions, which are coming up and which we're very excited about. And you asked us, Jackie, just off air about the big purple phone. So
yes.
This is an Android device which was initially made for seniors, but certainly very useful for people who just don't want smart technology. Now, I think we should be very clear and say that this is probably not a device that a totally blind person would use, because it doesn't have any tactile buttons. It also has very limited speech feedback. But for people with low vision, it has large buttons, it has good colour contrast, and there's a range of applications built into the device, and they're adding more all the time. And we had a very interesting webinar about the big purple phone a couple of months ago, where Libby Henderson, who's the co-founder of Big Purple, did a presentation on that. And you can find that on Sight and Sound Technology YouTube channel. If you search for that, she does a complete run through of that device, but a very interesting device for sure. Just to say, we are going to be launching a device called Maggie. And this is a virtual reality headset to allow, again, for people with low vision, to allow them to see better in certain scenarios. So it's one that we'll have on the stand at Site Village. So if you're coming to Site Village, it may be worth having a look.
And I guess I've got to ask the question, are there going to be any JAWS offers this year at Site Village, as there have been in previous years?
At time of recording, the answer to that is no. We're, I suppose, and I think, Jackie, when you and I talked about this last year, we're all the time speaking to Vispero. There's very good lines of communication open about just the pricing situation with Jaws. We are aware that it is challenging for lots of people. We've been talking to lots of people and working with them to try to help them get access to the latest version of Jaws. So I think the best thing I can say to people is keep in touch with us. I know some people talk to us at Sight Village when maybe they have an SMA that's going to expire and see what is the best way to continue. Do you stay on a perpetual license? Do you go to subscription, etc.? All that stuff will be determined by where you are in your Jaws usage journey, and in some cases, what version you are going to be upgrading from, because there has been some changes last year. So if you're going anything prior to 2024 now, there is a price implication in that as well.
So how do people get in touch with Sight and Sound, Stuart?
So give us a call on 01604 798070. You can visit us at sightandsound.co.uk, or you can send an email to info@sightandsound.co.uk.
Stuart, as ever, it's a real pleasure seeing you again, if you like, face to face. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Jackie. Pleasure as always.
Time now on RNIB Tech Talk to explore tech timelines. Yes, this is the feature where we talk to blind and partially sighted tech users about the technology they have been using. Bit of the past, bit of the present, a bit of the future talk as well. Joining us today is Tony Gebhard. Tony, thank you for joining us.
Oh my gosh, it's a pleasure again to talk to you, Hubert, and get a chance to share some insight with the audience.
Diving into tech timeline, we'll start at the beginning. And the first question I've got for you, in terms of assistive technology, what was kind of the first piece of assistive technology that you owned, that you discovered?
The first one that I owned was actually System Access, the screen reader System Access. And it was made by Cirotech. And they were around in the late 90s, 2000s era, and it was this System Access to Go. It's where you could, they had this portable copy of the screen reader. It was using the DeckTalk synthesizer, and you could put it on a flash drive and plug it into any Windows XP, Windows Vista 7 PC, and you would just press Caps Lock F, and boom, the screen reader would immediately start up. And to me, like when I was 11, that was my way of being like, oh my God, this is a discovery moment. Like I can use my own computer, because I had been using Jaws at that point, Jaws version 5 or Jaws 6, on a laptop at school with my TVI that would visit me twice a week, you know, but I didn't own that. You know, that was something I had to look forward to each time, you know, so the anticipation was always there. But having my own flash drive, like me, like 11-year-old Tony with this flash drive that I could plug into a computer at home, and I was like, oh my gosh. You know, that was an experience in of itself.
Yes, the independent power that gives you, I can just plug this in and any computer will talk to me. It's fantastic.
Right. Yeah.
The enthusiasm that brings is quite a something. But, you know, there's been assistive technology of all sorts since then up to now and, you know, that sort of thing. So out of all the assistive technologies you've used, what would you say is your favorite? Would it be that or would it be something else entirely?
It's a loaded question, I'll be honest, because I'm such a lover of what comes and makes its way through the airwaves and the ingenuity that so many people have been bringing to the table. But I would say definitely one of my favorite assistive technologies to have come to our market and do what it does is the Be My Eyes company. I love what they do. They revolutionized the way we connect with people in 2015 when they announced their app and their services, and it was a breath of fresh air to be able to have that on-demand connection with someone around the world who has the patience and willingness to assist you with everyday tasks. To me, that's that was history in the making, and now, you know, Be My Eyes is 11 years old and has their own foundation now, as announced from CSUN 2026. And, you know, they've done so many different integrations and partnerships with Meta, Ray-Ban glasses, and InnoSearch, and different service partners as well, like Amtrak and Microsoft and Google. So you can get connected with representatives now who can have video access and be able to assist you. I mean, that to me, some people would expect me to say some kind of AI or something like that. And as much as I love AI, to me, that the Be My Eyes part is like my most favorite because of the human interaction element and how it's brought millions and millions of volunteers and blind people together from across the globe.
It's fantastic. And you can have all sorts of conversations with these people. And that's the beauty of it. Sometimes you call them for help, but you end up talking about all sorts of things sometimes accidentally while they're helping you with something. So it's another way of connecting with people.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to widen this a little bit. So you can give me an assistive technology for this, but you can also talk about general piece of technology, because the question I have for you is what, assistive or general technology is currently making the biggest difference in your life?
The technology making the biggest difference, I'd say right now, is Gemini and Claude. I use both of those large language models in helping me with development, helping me with marketing, and helping along the way with my brand on social media and through the web. So, just having that level of assistance from agentic AI has been just absolutely astounding.
Now, this is always an interesting question I have for people, because people always like to see, you always hear people going, oh, I wish this was still around, or this piece of technology was underrated, it was so good, it's not there anymore. So my question is, if there's one piece of technology you would like to see revived, what is it that you would go for?
Technology is so evolutionary, it changes year to year with the necessities and demands of the market. And I feel like at times, and I feel like you'll hear this from everyone with various eras of their life, but I feel like the glory days, the pioneering, the beginning was the 2000s, where companies like Cirotec were doing system access, NVDA first came out in 2009. It was the first of its kind. JAWS even, was way more lightweight. Running JAWS kind of felt like an experience back then. JAWS for Windows is ready, right? I miss that. I miss that welcoming kind of experiential process. I mean, it's like Windows 95 and Windows 98, right? You felt like you were stepping into space with the kind of sound themes that they had at the time. And, just innovation was in a very unique place, and assistive technology was no different, right? And I feel like just I miss that. I guess it's not one particular technology per se. It's the it's that kind of dark middle ages of assistive technology. And some people might say it was the 90s, some people might say it was the 80s, back when with MS-DOS and all that. But for me, I was born in 96, right? So when I was 11, it was the mid 2000s. So of course, for me, that was my golden age, experiential environment for tech. So yeah, I mean, full stop on that one. I think that'd be my answer to that.
I will let your imagination run on this one, because I do this to most people for this final question, because with the way technology develops, you can literally say something here and it may become true, however ridiculous, however imaginary. My question to you is, what would you like to see tech do in the future? What development would you like to see yourself?
I would really love to see autonomous vehicles really put through their pace. We're in a big piloting phase right now. We're in the dark ages of autonomous vehicles. This is only the beginning. I think it was 2011, the first idea of an autonomous vehicle was thrown out there by Ford and Google, where they did a partnership. And I think the National Federation of the Blind had a had some kind of involvement with that, with Mark Riccobono. And there was a big curious leap at that point, and Tesla started doing it and an experiment. But of course, you still needed a license. You had to purchase the you know, the self-driving upgrade, $15,000 or something like that. And, you know, that still required a blind person to have sight. But now, you know, we have companies like Waymo who are operating in a few cities across the U.S. that are testing the environment, testing, you know, what's going to work, what doesn't. And I've been hearing it from so many peers. You know, I myself have not had the privilege to ride in one yet. That is a goal for 2026, is to get my butt down to Phoenix or Austin and try this. The state of politics, the state of philosophy, I think, is what's holding it back in so many ways. But I won't go too deep into that. I'll just say this. Autonomous vehicles are the future. You know, there will come a day, I believe, where the gas-powered vehicle will become obsolete and will be, you know, it'll be like the Jetsons, right? We're in flying cars. And, you know, in this new leap of technological advancement. So, you know, go back to that comment. We're in the dark ages right now with autonomous vehicles. So it only gets better. It's only going to get better. Right? It's at the worst. It's at the worst as it'll ever be. As they say, right? So, yeah, autonomous cars.
I've seen one and been stood next to one and actually felt one of these, but I've never been inside one to ride one. So it's on my list as well.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
It sounds exciting. Well, this is what I love about this feature. You get to explore all sorts, and we have certainly done that with yourself. So thank you very much, Tony Gephardt, for sharing your tech timeline with us here on RNIB Tech Talk.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Hubert, and to the RNIB. I hope everyone has a beautiful day.
This is Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
With me today is Ellis of Vision Aid Technologies. You're very welcome, Ellis.
Thanks, Jackie. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. It's always good to catch up with you guys on what you're selling, what you're going around the country showing at different exhibitions. And because a lot of our listeners maybe don't get that opportunity, it's always nice to hear about what's coming out. So what's new with Vision Aid at the moment?
Thanks. Yeah, well, we've obviously just come back from a trip over to Ireland and Belfast just the other week, which is great to see you and some of the team. And we set up like a mini Sight Village exhibition over there. And it's amazing. The last kind of 6 to 12 months, really, Braille is changing probably at a faster rate than it ever has in terms of innovation and development. And things that go alongside with it. Obviously, you're familiar with the DotPad X yes. product, which has come on leaps and bounds since the first DotPad and then the predecessor, the DotWatch, to that for proper multi-line Braille. And then we've, at the same time, was 2 or 3 years ago, we had a product by a company called Inventivio, based in Germany, that released a product that made tactile diagrams accessible independently for a blind student or user of the diagram. So you didn't need somebody sat next to you describing what it was. And it was a great product, but they, in the last 6 to 12 months on there, have released a new version of it, which is neater and faster and more powerful and more accurate. And then they've also added a whole range of accessories to it to allow maths and measuring and actual letters as well, from when students are learning Braille, to make it far more interactive. And then they've also opened up the ability to add 3D models to the product as well. So I've been doing this for 30 years. I've never really seen anything like this. And then you add to that that they've got EU funding for creating the whole syllabus, basically, for education in tactile graphics for this product, which then means it can be learnt independently. And there are, last time I checked last week, there were over 13,000 curated tactile documents, and they're currently working their way through biology, I hear. So literally every single lesson that a teacher would need to teach a diagram with biology for cells or plants or anything like that, there are diagrams for, and they more and more keep popping up all the time. So it's just a fantastic resource base, and that's included with it. It's really exciting.
So how does it work? Because I had a quick look at it when I was in Belfast at the RNIB office that day when you were over recently. And I was absolutely blown away by it. And I haven't been able to stop thinking about it ever since, just because I love anything that's tactile and anything that has audio that goes with it, which this product does. So how does it work? How do they get all that information into these tactile diagrams?
Yeah, great question. So basically what it is a high resolution camera that is looking down at an A3 area, and it supports A3 or A4 swell paper. So everyone's familiar with swell paper. It's obviously what you print on with a laser printer to then run it through a fuser to then create the tactile diagram. So you take one of these tactile diagrams, place it on the bed. It has sort of a platform where, so you can line it up perfectly. And on each of the swell diagrams that are created for the Tactonom Rediflex, there are four circles in each corner so that the camera knows exactly. You don't have to line it up perfectly. You just position it, clip it in place, and then it will accurately know exactly where you're, what it is that you're feeling. That camera is then looking down at your fingertip, and wherever you put your finger on the tactile diagram, the Tactonom Rediflex knows. And linked on every diagram as well, and printed on every diagram, is a QR code. So the device itself has a Wi-Fi connection and a LAN port connection to allow it to connect to Tactonom's database of these documents, which is where they're created and stored. And they are, as I said, I think before, freely available for anybody who's got a Tactonom device. And that's the portal that you then also go to create your own documents. So it's not, you're not just limited to the ones that are there and they make. It's very easy to make your own ones. When you make your own diagram, it then embeds the QR code on it for you automatically. When you then print that out, run it through the fuser, capture it for the first time on your Tactonom Rediflex, that first time the device will have to have an internet connection, because that's when it will download all the additional information. It's like a heat map for the tactile diagram. When you create them, it's like the easiest desktop publishing program you've ever used, just to sort of draw blocks around the areas where the points of interest basically on the tactile diagram, and then you can type as much or as little information for that particular area on the diagram as you like. And you can also include audio files for that bit as well. So it can read text out with the text-to-speech voices, and then it can then play musical instrument if it's a symphony orchestra layout, which is one of the ones that we've got here. It's for science diagrams, it could be parts of different objects, animals, it could be different noises. It can be, basically it's the creativity of the teacher, and also thinking how the student, sighted student, would be learning that information as well. So it really opens up a huge realm of possibilities. Then all you do is you put your finger on the bit you're interested in, and along the bottom edge, there are a set of really nice tactile controls. The large center round button right in the middle of the control panel is the enter button. And whatever your finger is on when you push that enter button, whatever your other finger is on, because obviously you need to use your other hand to do that, it then reads out what is underneath your fingertip with as much or as little detail as you choose or has been entered in for that diagram.
I mean, the diagram that I really liked was the orchestra. It showed the layout of an orchestra, the different parts. So there was a key, sort of a guide at the left-hand side that actually showed you all the different representations of the different areas of the tactile diagram. So there was a rough bit for one lot of instruments, there was a smoother bit for another lot, and this tactile key, it gave you an indication of what the different parts of the orchestra were to feel under your fingers. And then you could press, as you say, that button with your fingertip on top of the diagram, and then it would start reading it to you, tell you the different parts of the orchestra. So if you had your finger on, say, the oboe, it would tell you about that and which part of the symphony it would be coming from. And it blew my mind completely, because I'd never seen anything quite like this before, that a representation on a piece of swell paper of a diagram, and then to get the audio as well. And the voice was really good. I don't know what voices that it uses, but they were really clear voices. And also the different instruments it played on that particular diagram. So it gave a little snippet of a piano and so on, a violin, all the different sections of the orchestra. I just could not get my head around how this was feasible on just feeling a diagram. So it was really good. And of course, you had other ones you were demonstrating that day as well. There was a maze where you had to follow, I think it was a worm.
That's right. You've got to get the worm out to try and find the apple at the end of the maze.
That's
a great one when somebody's learning, sort of working their way around a tactile diagram, but making it more entertaining and fun, which for younger users when they're doing that, that's a really important thing as well, just to get them engaged with it.
So would you say that it's really more geared to schools and, you know, for people learning Braille or have specific learning needs? I mean, yes, an adult like me could sit and happily play with that thing all the time and download all these different diagrams. It would be great. But in reality, is it really geared more towards education? Because I could see a big need for it in that area.
Yeah, I think that's the primary use case for it is education and people learning. Obviously, learn Braille because there are a whole set of utilities with the now Magic Braille letters and Magic Braille numbers. It can actually help you learn Braille as well as then understanding tactile diagrams. I mean, the use cases for workplaces are more kind of floor plan maps, looking at graph information as well if there's important things. But obviously, that requires somebody to be able to actually create that document, and then it will be with live data. So if somebody needed to look at and understand a graph information, you could do that. But in all honesty, AI is now so good at describing a graph. If you've got it, you give it into ChatGPT and ask it to describe it, and it will tell you what's going on in the graph. So you don't really want to have to go to the process of printing out a tactile diagram for that, for someone in business where speed is going to be absolute of the essence, and you never reuse the same content because the data is going to be changing all the time. Whereas in a class, once the swell paper diagrams have been created, obviously they have to be stored as they are now anyway. So it sort of fits in with the workflow that teachers are used to, but you get all this extra information layered on top, and it doesn't require a member of staff to sit next to the pupil to take them through it all the time as well. So it frees up the actual teacher resource. And then they only need to be changed when the curriculum changes, which does happen regularly, obviously, but it's not going to be every year you need to change every document. I think the education is the key focus for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So what if somebody, you know, in education or anywhere else for that matter, if it's a specific workplace need, what is included when you purchase the Tectonum Flex?
Tactonum, so yeah, it's a strange name, isn't it? Tactonum Reader Flex. It stands for, if I remember correctly, when Klaus told me, it's tactile and then autonomy. So it's a mixture of those. So autonomy being automatic and tactile from that for obvious reasons. And the Reader Flex, because it's one that now folds up and folds flat, whereas the old one was much more fixed and much larger. So you just get the main unit with it when you buy it. So it's kind of more geared towards people who may well already have like a printer and a flash device. And Tactonum have actually released their own heater for swell paper now as well, called the Transformer, the Tactonum Transformer. And they do their own swell paper now as well, because they were getting, they said, wild kind of variations in the quality of swell paper. And also because their diagrams, they go quite close to the edges on some of the swell paper heaters or fusers, they didn't always fuse towards the edges. The sort of centimetre or two around the edges never seem to fuse that well, which is why they've done their own one of those as well. So there are those accessories as well. Then there's things like a carry case. You can buy sample documents, to the really good ones that are great for people to get used to with it as well. But obviously, if you've got all that equipment to be able to make it yourself in a school environment, there's no point purchasing those. You can just make those very easily, going to their portal and downloading them as a PDF, printing them out and running them through the fuser in a few minutes. Then they do have the accessories, which is an ever-growing set. So as I mentioned before, the magic numbers. So it's a really nice metal case that they come in. They're clipped in place, all in order. And then you get magnetic strips to position them accurately onto the swell paper diagram that you're working with. So you can then do maths, sort of flow charts and numbers to work out sums as you go around the page, and it will tell you whether you've got the answer right or wrong. It doesn't tell you what you've got wrong, because you need to correct it yourself on there. But again, for actually checking that you're understanding what's going on, giving you the right answer or telling you if you've got one wrong is really, really useful. And the same with letters. So there's sort of word jumbles, missing letters, all things like that for exercises for people to feel the Braille on the actual chips, effectively they are, place them onto the swell, onto the tactile diagram in the right place. You push the enter button, it tells you if you've got the right letter for it as well while you're learning. So it's just completely different to anything else that's ever existed for these type of learning exercises.
Yeah, I don't think in all the different Braille devices and all the different audio devices that are out there or that I've ever come across, I'm not sure I've ever seen anything quite like this. It is an incredible piece of equipment, and to be fair, it will have a fairly incredible price. What sort of price are we looking for?
Yeah, it's £4,500, just under. Yeah. So £4,495 for the main device.
Yeah, that's for the main device. Cool. And then you have obviously any accessories. If you don't already have swirl paper and the transformer, then obviously you'd have to buy those as well. But it really is, it's opening up a world, particularly for pupils that are working in mainstream education. I think it would be fair to say, if you're at a school for blind or low vision pupils, they may have something like this. But for education departments who have, you know, a pupil in a school who's in mainstream, I mean, think of the immediacy of something like that. It's a bit like one of the multi-line Braille displays as well, you know, where there is so much Braille at your disposal with immediacy and the ability that these devices now have to actually, you could draw and create your own diagrams just on the spot, where you don't even need to produce them in swirl paper, but you can actually, with the devices like DotPad X, you can actually draw on your iPad or something for a pupil, say, this is what this looks like, have a feel of this, and then it comes up on the DotPad X itself. It's just tremendous. It's a fantastic time to be blind, if you like, or have very low vision, because there is just so much out there. It is only going to get better, so you know, it's improving all the time.
And you touched on about the amount of information you can get on there as well. I remember there's a the periodic table is one of those tough things normally to represent in Braille, and it can be kind of 16 to 20 pages if you need to see the entire thing, and you've got to lay it all out and have it all in the right order. On this, you can have it printed, obviously, so you just get the two-letter acronym for each element.
Yeah.
But then when you touch the element and push the enter key, it will tell you the element, it tells you the atomic number, what group of elements it's in, any special properties that are in it. And this can easily really be customized as well based on the age of the student and what it is that they're learning. So it will be different for GCSE or A-level or university level when they're going through things like that as well. And just by editing a text box on the portal, you can then just change the amount of information that goes into that for them. So it's, and then you can choose when you're having it read back, whether you just have the basic information or the full information read back to you as well, just through the menu. So it's really well thought out.
It
just gives access on a single sheet to it. It's like a QR code for information. It just packs so much information into that. It's like you capture your QR code and it takes you to a whole website. It's kind of like that with this. It captures the QR code on here, and then you've got an entire website worth of information on one document. It's fantastic.
Thank you very much. That is absolutely amazing. I'm glad we had you on, because I've learned some new things today, and I will be taking an in-depth look at some of it as well, because, you know, it is really useful. And I know our listeners will find it very useful. So thank you very much, Ellis, for popping along and speaking to us today.
Not at all. Thanks. It's always a pleasure, Jackie. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Time for a bit of a game here on RNIB Tech Talk. So a few weeks ago in our Tech Radar, I've mentioned a puzzle game called Cozy Sort Studio. I described it as a bit of a leisurely puzzle game where you're not timed, you can take your time and you can play house decorator a little bit. And this is exactly what we are going to show you today on my iPhone. Let's have a look.
Cozy Sort Studio. Stopping Braille screen input. Opening Cozy Sort Studio. Rocket fill. Image. Rocket fill. Image.
So let me show you what we've got here.
Come back to your restored home. Heading. Restore the breakfast surface. Tea cart tidy. 0 of 1 complete. Continue restoring. Button.
So we can continue restoring the puzzle I was at last time.
Restore home. 0 of 7 details restored. 5 warmth saved. Button. Support shop. Settings. Button.
Your settings.
Accessible play options. Button.
Accessibility options, exactly there in the game, which I really like.
Join the Cozy Thought Studio Facebook group. Button.
You can join the Facebook group.
Privacy policy.
Privacy
button.
Policy.
Restore the breakfast surface. Tea cart tidy. Title progress card. Accessible play. Voiceover. Reduce motion. Larger targets. And no timers, stay ready.
That's basically all you have. So I'm going to find the button that's to say continue restoring.
Continue restoring. Button.
There we go.
Breakfast nook.
Breakfast nook.
Next detail. Folded throw is ready for one warmth. Today, restore the breakfast surface. Tea cart tidy. Your first caring day is waiting. A tea break arrives after a few caring days. Settle the tea cart so its tray, cards, and warm little cup shelf feel inviting instead of crowded. Serving tray. Ready. Breakfast nook. Tea cart tidy. Ground the cart with its tray and notes. Then let the cups and softer touches finish it, plus two warmth. Journal progress and home progress.
Okay, so you'll be progressing these things once you decorate the house or this puzzle. Let me show you how this kind of looks like if you're decorating. So you've got...
Serving tray, ready, button. Sunday cup, ready, button. Tea recipe card, ready, but tea notes, ready, button. Honey jar, ready, button. Card cloth, ready, button. Porcelain cup, ready, button. Card pocket, empty, button.
Now, so you've had a list of items that you need to put into places, and now you've got locations. So you've got the...
Card pocket, empty, button.
Card pocket.
Card shelf, empty, button.
Shelf.
Linen crate, empty, button.
Linen crate.
Title, button. Settings, title, linen, card shelf, empty.
And it's these three locations you need to fill with all these items. So let's give it a go.
Porcelain cup, ready, button.
Porcelain cup, I'm going to double tap on that.
Porcelain cup, card pocket, empty, card shelf, empty, button.
I think it will go here.
Card shelf, empty, selected, porcelain cup, selected, button, card pocket, card shelf, empty, button.
So now that still says empty. I'll show you what it says if we swipe back to the description.
Select card cloth, honey jar, tea note, tea recipe, Sunday, serving, almost there. Porcelain cup belongs in card shelf, but place the supporting pieces first and the daily use favorites last.
So... what you now have found is it actually didn't put it there because it is the right location, but you need to put other items there. So you can't just place items wherever you like. You need to place them in the right order as well.
Selected. Honey jar. Ready. Honey jar. Honey jar. Ready. Linen crate. Empty. Linen crate. Empty. Linen crate. Comfortably filled. Contains honey jar. Button.
So there we've got. I put the honey jar in this crate. So I got that right.
Card porcelain card cloth. Ready. Button.
Let's see. Okay, so let's try...
Tea notes. Ready. Button.
Put this in...
Tea notes. Ready. Card pocket. Empty.
In the
button.
Card pocket first.
Card pocket. Empty. Serving tray. Ready. Button. Tea notes slides into card pocket. It grounds the space before softer pieces follow. A bit of clutter clears. The room is opening up. Tea recipe card. Card pocket. Comfortably filled. Card pocket. Comfortably... Serving tray. Ready. Tea recipe card slips into card pocket. It makes the corner feel remembered. Card pocket is complete. Card pocket now feels beautifully settled. Good rhythm.
There we go. So we've done three items so far. We've got a few more to go.
Serving tray. Serving tray. Ready. Card pocket. Card shelf. Linen tray. Card shelf. Empty. Card shelf. Empty. Sunday cup. Ready. Button.
So.
Serving tray settles into card shelf. It grounds the space before softer pieces follow. Half a room is settled. The card shelves and handles are settling into a gentle serving rhythm. Good rhythm.
So you get these descriptions?
Porcelain cup, ready, button. Porcelain cup, ready, card pocket, card shelf, star card shelf, starting, Sunday cup, ready,
there
button.
We go.
Porcelain cup belongs in card shelf. It reads like something someone will reach for again tomorrow. Another area opens up. More of the room is clear. Sunday cup, ready, card pocket, beautifully set, card shelf, comfortably filled, card shelf, comfortably, card cloth, ready, button.
There we go, we've done the other item.
Sunday cup completes card shelf. It reads like something someone will reach for again tomorrow. Card shelf is complete. Card shelf now feels beautifully settled. Good rhythm.
Which leaves us with one more item.
Card cloth. Ready. Button. Card cloth. Ready. Card pocket. Card shelf. Linen crate. Comfortably filled. Linen crate. Cozy Thought Studio. Room transformation preview. The room is opening. Breakfast nook has opened up. Kitchen calm. 3 of 11 stars. 27% restored. Tea cart ready. Heading. The tea cart looks lovingly prepared, like it could roll into the next slow breakfast at any moment. Morning corner restored. Change open home board. Button. Keep restoring. Button.
And if we tap keep restoring.
Recipe draw breakfast nook.
It will move us to the next part.
Next detail. Folded throw is ready for one warmth. Today, restore the breakfast surface. Recipe drawer reset. Your first caring day is waiting. A tea break arrives after a few caring days. Sort the recipe drawer and nearby shelf so breakfast ideas feel easy to find and lovely to revisit. Deepening glow. Keep restoring the room.
So that's the next puzzle, but we're going to stop here. That is Cozy Sort Studio, all about placing different items within the home in the right places and in the right order as well. As you found out, that's not as easy to do as you'd think. So it's quite an interesting puzzle because you're not timed and you can take your time placing these items. It's quite interesting. It's a nice little game to do when you want to kill time, I think. When I come back from an exhausting day at work, it's just nice to sit there and play that. I think it's no pressure. It's quite relaxing, I think. Plus, it gives you a chance to do a bit of decorating. So, yes, that is Cozy Sword Studio. Let us know what you think. And if you have other games you would like us to demonstrate, also let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Well, that is it for another Tech Talk this week. And if you love what you're hearing, then, well, you can always check it out on the podcast as well. Of course, tune in same time next week for more tech chat indeed. For now, though, from myself, Hubert Pavelkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Goodbye.